Well, I think we're going to, I'm just going to make the decision to kind of change our system a little bit. And we were going to hold questions till the end, but I think we'd rather have a discussion as we move forward. So anytime you have questions or want to clarify some things, just interrupt us and we'll have a little dialogue. Do I need this? Perhaps. I don't know. You just want it so you don't have to hear that.
The only thing I was wondering, I don't know if it's every single session. Do they record the session?
Oh.
So if somebody wanted to hear it, so if somebody recorded it, it doesn't matter.
It is connected to some other thing here, so maybe we should.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, here are our objectives. They've been up here for a while, so we're going to speak a little bit about the food charter that we've developed in Minnesota, our purpose, our approach, and our intended impacts, and maybe some of the process pieces will be helpful for like your food project. Understand the public engagement process. We really took seriously and worked really hard at public engagement. Noelle's going to talk a little bit about how communities in Northwest Minnesota are implementing some of the strategies and also how they were able to involve people in the engagement piece that then led to the implementation side of things. And then today is our unveiling of the health equity guide that you picked up when you came. So you're the first to see it. And Nia is going to speak to health equity and how that's been embedded in a guiding principle for us with the food charter and how the health equity guide came to be. All right, so let's get started with the Minnesota Food Charter. We in Minnesota are there four states have gone before us before we got started in creating a food charter. Most people are very well aware of Michigan's food charter, which had a strong focus on agriculture. And Minnesota decided to move forward, and our approach was looking at the food systems from a broader perspective, looking at the policy systems and environmental change approach, really looking at collective impact, developing promising practices, and then network development. And I'm going to speak a little bit more to that whole network development piece. But I wanted to let you know that another piece of emphasis for us was the institutional settings. So we were looking at where do people live, work, and play, and where are those opportunities to really impact what is offered and supported there. So up to two-thirds of a person's calories can come from an institution on a daily basis. So it really does have a significant impact on what people eat. And so making inroads and creating healthy environments at these at work sites, community schools, childcare, and healthcare, we felt was really potential to have a dramatic impact on the health of Minnesotans. So we had sort of these multi-layered approaches. And when we think about the food system, we're referring to that entire spectrum of food production, processing, and disposal. From farm to table, the food system encompasses how food is grown, processed, distributed, obtained, prepared, eaten, and disposed of. So we know that obesity and diet-related chronic disease are not simply the byproduct of overconsumption. It's not just on that individual basis, but inequities about the food system as a whole lead to systems and environments that can lead to poor health outcomes. I'm just going to give you an example. We have corner store work that there's an interest in making corner stores healthy, but there's a big distribution issue with corner stores being able to find those healthy foods at an affordable price that they can make money. So the larger food system and upstream is critical and important. The food charter, sometimes people, it helped me to explain it in this way, because the food charter is not just a document. The food charter was really about harnessing people power. It was really about creating a movement as well. So it's a change strategy designed to reduce and prevent obesity and diet-related diseases. And during our 3+ years of work, we've included a robust public engagement phase that used a community organizing approach to produce a shared roadmap. So it was one of those places where we really wanted to give people the opportunity to voice, because so often we do not have much to say about our food system. And I might also add, the way that I think about Minnesota is we really are the Silicon Valley of food. We have some of the largest international companies in the world, including Cargill, Syngenta, Ecolab, right? So so we have a lot of influence in our food system in Minnesota, but not necessarily on those people who have the most challenges around obtaining healthy food, and just your sort of regular person as well. So, and Minnesota also was the first to take a health approach to their food charter. So, Oregon, for example, it was hunger that they focused on. But we did try to learn from the other, and have had many conversations with others who had done food charters before us. Our logic model, again, as we talked about, involves three components with the long-term goal of reducing obesity and diet-related diseases. It's designed to build a shared public agenda for policy and systems change based on widespread public involvement and support to improve access to healthy food, and also creating active networks for action to implement food charter strategies. I did want to mention that we are, at next week, launching the Minnesota Food Charter Network as a result of our work. And the Community Transformation Grant, which was supposed to be 5 years, funded a bulk of this work along with a partnership with Blue Cross Blue Shield. But if any of you paid attention to policy things that happened, the Community Transformation Grant was cut at 3 years. It was a 5-year grant. We were able to sneak this out and get it just before those dollars ended, so we were really lucky in terms of the timing with that. But we have several state agencies, including the Department of Health, the Department of Agriculture, the University of Minnesota Extension, and Blue Cross providing matching funds for these different funds to create a food charter network, which has a home now with the University of Minnesota Healthy Foods, Healthy Lives Institute. So it was a way to help coordinate all the activities and to help with shared learning and a shared capacity building across the state to move the food charter implementation strategies forward. So again, I'm going to speak more now about the food charter and the engagement, but I want you to know that it really was a big movement building piece, and it's about harnessing people power. All right. So there were three phases in the food charter. Our first phase in 2013 was engagement, and those of you who are grant funded know how this all works, right? You get your grant and then you really don't get the money till 6 months later because you got all that hoop stuff, so you're already behind, and we had all that too. But we had some great engagement. Then in 2014 was the drafting phase. The consultant and myself, who were the primary shovel diggers in the drafting piece, we spoke to how we couldn't believe how much we wrote. We think we wrote a couple novels over the course of this, just because of the amount of engagement and the writing that took place. So we harnessed our skills a little bit on that. And then now we are in the implementation and support side. And Nia and Noelle will speak more to that. So let's talk a little bit about the engagement phase. It was the first step in developing it. We needed a large base of supportive players involved in crafting the vision, identifying the specific way forward, mobilizing and implementing the desired changes, and supporting the overall effort. So throughout 2013 and early in 2014, we had more than 2,500 Minnesotans contribute their perspectives. We had events, listening sessions, focus groups, and interviews. Part of the food charter input process involved setting specific events, so we targeted healthcare, we targeted work sites, we targeted community settings such as the hunger relief groups, as well as the retail side. We targeted childcare, and we sat and listened to those who are involved with schools as well. So we focused on those institutions, but we also focused on the broader piece. The other piece that we also knew that we needed to do, because of our experience in the past with this, is knowing that what people tend to devolve to is that everybody needs to learn how to cook. Right? So when you start having conversation about what's wrong with food, right, in our food system, it's like, well, people don't know how to cook. So we wanted to get people to kind of lift their chins up. So in a way, we also had an education process with it. So what we did is we created a toolkit for our listening sessions. And we had first a series that people could answer how important was this, they thought. And we had things in the area of food skills, food environments, and food infrastructure. And we focused on the policy system's environmental questions rather than the individual. We were trying to bring people up. So, as we expected, 97% of the people said, yep, it's food skills is the problem and kids need to learn how to cook. But instead of focusing on the individual, we look at what's the system that's creating that. So, for example, at the time, there were no home economics in the curriculum at the Department of Education. Home economics was the only curricula that had no representation at the Department of Education. That's changed now. So when the spoils were being divided at the Department of Education, there was no one to represent that particular area, which is the most concrete in terms of teaching food skills at the school level. So do you see the... So we were trying to get people to think a little bit differently, not about the end result, but what are the systems that cause those. Great conversations, I might add. All of this is online as well, so our report. We have a 75-page report about what people did give us for input, and then we have some more specific reports as well. But I want to talk a little bit about the values. At the beginning, we developed a set of values to inform the public engagement process, the document, the strategies, and our intended impacts. You can read these here. We also then would have to answer to them, and that's something that we always go back and look at. And we had a large steering committee, and they would keep our toes to the fire for this as well. So I work in state government. It works differently, right? Sometimes it's a little slow. this was warp speed that we were going at. it was quite unbelievable what we were able to do within the environments that we were in. And part of it was because we had a great partner in an external world with Blue Cross Blue Shield. So I point to Nia because that's where she's from. So sometimes your partners can help nudge and move things along as well. So here's a little bit about our engagement. This gives you a sense of what we did. We had over 2,500 people participate in food charter events. We had nearly 400 online worksheets, so we had a way in which people could individually do that. I took calls from moms from PTAs who were interested. We had over 4,000 visits to our online town hall forum. So after we finished the initial engagement, we went back and asked some questions to folks to clarify what did you mean about this and to give that online forum approach. I would have to say the online forum, I'm curious to see if it would be even more robust today, because that was 2 years ago, so you kind of think about how things have evolved in just a short period of time. It was something we had no experience with. But I mean, the fact that we did get 4,000 visits was pretty significant, but it tends to be a certain personality. So I'm just saying that. We had a wonderful steering committee of 27 diverse leaders. So remember, we were talking about it across the entire food spectrum. And so we needed to have a farmer organizations engaged, as well as companies, grassroots leaders, grass top leaders. We really worked hard to get the diversity of our state, both from Greater Minnesota and our metro area, and as well as the various sectors. So we had a great diversity there, and put a lot of effort into maintaining that group of people. And I have to say, the steering committee chair, who is from Healthy Foods, Healthy Lives, which was another really good strategic plan that just worked beautifully, because that was where the intersection of agriculture and health happened at the university, and she has a lot of sort of freedom, a little more than we do in state government. So she could do and say things sometimes that I, in the background, had to be quiet about or whatever. She said that she'd never in her 40 years of work experience had never had such a positive experience with a group of people who actually asked to meet together more. And these are really top level busy people. So there was something about that steering committee and the work that was done that was exciting and really impassioned people. So we were really lucky with that. Let's see. Just as an example, our largest group for our one of our events was, and Noel can speak to this, was a group of Native American elders. And our smallest group was the Food Defense Task Force that the governor has appointed. So we did really try very, very hard to get a wide variety of people. And, yeah. Yeah, it's our governor's Food Defense Task Force. It's chaired by Cargill, so it really represents the really big guns around food in our state.
Okay, so were they responsible for, like, I guess, making recommendations?
No, everyone had equal input. So we had a set way in which you provided input, and they gathered and provided input the elders did, and other groups as well. The SNAP-Ed participants that we had. We even had eighth graders give input as well. So, all right. As we talked a little bit more, again, we really worked hard at getting many perspectives. And I don't know, do I need to tell you about the funding? I think I did already. So. In the first phase, though, because of limited funding, right, we couldn't run out and do all these focus groups ourselves and to do all these events ourselves. So it really was volunteer, and we gave people a toolkit and had a video to start it off so that everyone was talking the same language. But we also realized that we were missing something. We needed to really reach out to those who probably experience the most injustices in the food system in our state. And so with some additional funding from Blue Cross, some funding that we were able to allocate, as well as with the University of Minnesota Center on Health Disparities, we were able to get contributions from other communities. So we had engagement sessions with Latina and Somali child care providers, for example, Spanish-speaking food and farm workers. Hmong Farmers, Southeast Asian serving organizations working with low-income families, youth, and other members of these communities with healthy food access issues, urban Native American communities, elders, and their care providers on reservations in northern Minnesota, and tribal food sovereignty advocates. So we, again, really tried to reach out to those who experience the biggest challenges. How am I doing with time? Time to... What's that? Okay, thanks. Alrighty, I'll move along here. The other thing I just want to emphasize is that strategic communications is critical. This is something I, in my 25 plus years of public health experience, probably honed my skills in communications more than anything and learned the most about strategic communications. It's not always what you say, it's who says it to who, so strategic that way, but it also is what you say. And so we put a lot of emphasis in planning, including goals, target audiences, key messaging, supporting data, appropriate channels for messaging, and training spokespeople who served as trusted messengers in communities throughout the state. Remember again, we're in the Silicon Valley of food, and we're nudging change in a place where things are working pretty good. So strategic communications was really important. We have over 5,000 people that we reach through Facebook. We have hundreds on Twitter. 1,500 receive our monthly e-newsletter. We have had webinars, all kinds of other work to communicate to folks. And then in the drafting process, we had many, many people involved in drafting. We had a drafting committee, our steering committee, and peer reviewers reflecting the state's diversity, not only culturally, but across that food system. We had extensive one-on-one outreach with members of the communities. I think we wrote 100 thank you notes for people who reviewed things. And so an example, we sat down for a couple of hours with the Farmers Union to go through the food infrastructure and how should we say this, and because we really needed to make sure that we spoke to the change that was needed, but not in an inflammatory way that would shut the door immediately. So it was finding that really fine. The best thing for me that happened at the launch of the food charter was that the Commissioner of Agriculture stood up later in front of 500 people in support of it. That was amazing. And we had another example, an individual with the Indigenous Environmental Network provided extensive feedback to be sure we spoke to the concerns for our tribal Minnesotans. So I'm going to have, can you guys pass out the food charter quick, and then we'll move along.
Can I ask, is there an evaluation model built in?
Yes and no. Because of the community transformation grant challenges that we had, the evaluation kind of component of it crumbled a bit in terms of, but we have been tracking and keeping track of the sort of strategic change that's been happening. Yeah. So unfortunately our evaluation friends have sort of fallen by the wayside, and we're trying to pick that back up again. I know, it's really, that's the hardest thing about when these funding things happen like that. Yeah. All right. I'm sorry, you guys, I'm taking way too long. So I just wanted to, we passed out the food charter for you. If you just want to page through quickly with me, what's in it, we have the definition, the rationale, calls to action, and then in there we have the challenges and strategies. Now this has gone through, as I said, many, many iterations, and we worked with the Public Health Law Center, who did all the exploration to see about best practices and promising practices and researchers to show that the strategies that Minnesotans said they wanted to have happen actually would have impact. So there was a research component to that as well. There are 99 strategies in there, and the five key themes, which are the five pages of challenges and strategies, revolve around food skills, food accessibility, food affordability, availability, and the infrastructure. Also, woven throughout are cultural and structural barriers as central themes, and that in part is why we felt we needed to have an emphasis on health equity and moving ahead with that health equity guide that Nia is going to talk about. I'm going to move along and